My name is Peter. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Peter.
So, yeah, it's all right. It's my intro music. I get that. That's what plays inside my head anyway. So I am going to try to do it a little bit more like a workshop this time. So I'm going to try to pack a lot into this. I plan to get through it all. We'll see what happens. But I plan on doing 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, starting in We Agnostics. So last place we left off was at the end of More About Alcoholism, and we covered the first step the past 2 weeks that I spoke, both last week and when I filled in a few weeks ago. So, a big part of the first step is, and I'm starting on page 44, by the way, but I am going to jump around, so I'll let you guys know what the pages are. A big part of the first step is realizing the insanity of my condition, right? The physical and the mental obsession are covered in depth in these first couple chapters. The second step is came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Now, in order to have a true first step experience, I must concede to myself this insanity, right? To be an alcoholic, to be powerless over alcohol the way that I am, I must have this insanity. So this is about coming to believe that it's possible that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Right? I've conceded that I am insane, and now it's talking about the ways to get to restoration. On page 44, I wrote, "To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face." So if I have had this first step experience, then I have acknowledged that these are my alternatives. Right, that I am going to die an alcoholic death. Right, the first step hammers that home. The first couple chapters hammer that home. If I be an alcoholic and I have no treatment, this is going to lead me to death. This is where this takes me. This is what happens to me. And the book is offering me a way out of that, a spiritual way of life. Now, me, when I came in here, I wasn't opposed to the God idea, but I wasn't on board with it. You know, when I came in here and I was told that my hope is God, my heart sank a little because I thought, oh, this is just mumbo jumbo. You guys are making this up as you go along. Whatever. I didn't really think that that was something that could save me, but I didn't hate the idea of God. Now, I've since worked with sponsees, and I've had my own experiences some way where I was like, this God thing isn't going to work. And I have people that I know and work with very closely who do have that experience with when God is brought up or a spiritual way of life is brought up, they kind of shut off. You know, they back away, right? And for me, I was told that by my sponsor, enough willingness to start off is, do you believe that I believe, right? That's enough belief to get your foot in the door. The second step is really lax as far as what I need to get a start, right? Is to put my foot in the door. It's a start. It's my own conception, right? It's very wide-ranged. You know, later on it talks about how there were a lot of things about spirituality that I couldn't myself accept, which is why I felt that I couldn't have this. But I'm now learning that a lot of these things I don't have to accept. I don't have to accept a particular religion. I don't have to accept this. I just have to get my foot in the door, right? It says came to believe. Came is a big word. It doesn't mean instantly believed, right? It says came to believe. But I need to start somewhere. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. My current spiritual practice did not get me sober, whatever that may be. I was raised Catholic, right? I went to Catholic church as a child, you know, and when my father passed away when I was 14, and at that point, he took us to church every Sunday. My dad was a great man, very religious, right? He believed, he was a practicing Catholic. He was a deacon at our church. We went to church every Sunday, went to CCD. I got confirmed. This is just what I was raised in. It was just what I knew. You know, this is God. This is the idea of it. And I had no problem with that, right? I liked it. You know, as a kid, you know, you're always bouncing around and bored in church, but I had no problem with church. And when my father passed away, I didn't turn my anger toward church, but I did turn my anger toward God. Right now, I was like, what kind of God would do this to me? You know, my dad told me that God will never give you anything you can't handle. And I said, well, I can't handle this, right? So I immediately kind of turned my back on God right there. But there was still a part of me that I was raised in this, right? I believed in this stuff, even though I was angry at God, I had a problem with God, right? I still believed in this stuff. And while I was drinking and drugging, I'd still pray in the evenings, right? I still had some sort of a spiritual practice. Now, it was really, you know, mostly just kind of stuff that I wanted, or, you know, if I was super grateful that something awesome happened, I'd be like, thanks God, I really like that. But I would do it because it was something that I grew up with. It was something that kept me, you know, tied with my dad. So I did hold on to this spiritual practice. So when I was asked, like, when I came in here, you know, do you believe in God or do you have a higher power of some sort? You know, I said yes. But my conception, my spiritual practices weren't enough to keep me sober because I was still drinking, right? And I say this to people who, you know, sponsees who have come in and they say, you know, well, I have this. I'm a very religious practicing this or practicing that. And that may be true, and they might know a lot more than me about religion, right? But whatever they are, whatever the case may be, if they're still drinking, then something is missing, right? There's something that I need. My practices can be fantastic, and there's nothing wrong with them, and we're not trying to take those practices away. We're trying to add to them, right? To make them grow, whatever that may be. And to those of us who don't have any practice at all, right? The more the merrier. We're trying to get our foot in the door. But either way, we're trying to expand on this at this point, right? Because whatever I was doing up until this point wasn't enough, or I would have gotten sober already, right? I would have already had this experience. I would be where I needed to be, and I'm not, right? And that was my same experience when I came in the door. The prayers that I was doing at night, the things that I would do, I'd go to church on Christmas. You know the Easter and Christmas crowd? That was me. I was the Easter and Christmas crowd. I stood in the back because I got there late, and there were no seats taken, and I was in the back, and I would sit there and I'd listen to the priest and go, yeah, 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 sure. And I had no idea what he was saying. That was me. And that wasn't enough to keep me sober. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might. But the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources failed as marshaled by the will were not sufficient. They failed utterly. My willpower is not enough to keep me sober. Right? This is something that is really hammered home in the first few chapters and in step one is my self-will is getting me nowhere. Right? It's not enough to keep me from picking up a drink. It's not enough to get me to have inner peace. Right? This spiritual malady, right, which is the third part of this illness, is not being treated by human powers and my willpower. Right? A big part of this next chapter is the first few chapters really covered the physical allergy and the mental obsession. Once I start, I can't stop. Once I stop, I can't stay stopped. Right? But now we're moving into the spiritual aspect of it. Right? The thing that feeds into all of it. You know, this cycle is fed by something, and it's this empty, this God-shaped hole in my heart that is causing me this pain, is causing me this suffering that I'm looking for a solution to. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power, right? And step two is all about getting us on that path, right? At step one, it has everything, that's the only step that has something to do with alcohol, right? Because alcohol is a symptom of my disease. It is not the disease itself. Right. Step two is when we start to open the door. You know, if I were to think of it as an analogy, right, the door, and we're trying to get through into this archway, into this whole beautiful world, and this is me just stopping the door from locking shut, right, just getting my foot in there. Going on to page 46, right in the middle of the page, we found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power which is God. I only need to be willing. All right? Willingness is the only thing. It says, I forget where it says it, but it says willingness is indispensable somewhere in this book that we read. It says willingness is indispensable. I only need to be willing. I don't need to understand what God is. I, to this day, still do not understand my God, and that's okay. I don't have to understand who my God is, right? I only need to be willing to believe in this thing, right? I only need to be willing. I don't need to have this sudden experience. And I really hammer that home because for me, and I've seen it over and over too, but for me even, I thought that I can't move past this step until I believe in God, right? And for me, that wasn't so bad, but I've had other guys who, it drives me nuts to hear from somebody, I'm stuck on step two, you know? Because I don't need to, I'm stuck on step two because I don't believe in God. right? Well, I don't need to believe in God at step two. I need to be willing. I could be willing to be willing, right? It's all about the willingness. And if I've had a proper step one experience, then that fire is lit under me, right? I have that gift of desperation, and that is enough to bring about willingness. On page 47 at the top, when therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies to other spiritual expressions which you find in this book. Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. And I find this line so, so, so important because the word God means different things to different people. Right? I was raised where the word God is, you know, just God. God is the creator, God is the boss, God is whatever, that's just what God means. But I have worked with so many people who the word God means Jesus or means this God, and they don't like that. Maybe they don't like that religion because of something that happened to them, or they just don't believe in it, but whatever, when they hear that, they think you guys are trying to push me towards a religion, right? And that's the last thing that I want to do because I think this is the coolest thing in the world because it's the only thing that I've ever seen, at least. Maybe there's some other thing out there that does it, but that I've ever seen that can give me a spiritual experience without giving me a religion, right? Where I can understand my own God that is personal to me, that I understand, that I can comprehend, that makes sense to me, that I can have an experience with, right? And I think that is a beautiful, wonderful thing. And in this book, they say God, right? And they say other spiritual terms. And I've had people specifically say to me, well, it sounds to me like they're trying to put a thin veil over it or whatever. And I think it's so important because once I start to get that suspicion, right, that's when my mind starts to close, right? My mind starts to tune out what you're saying. I don't want to hear it. I'm not going to take it into. And all this is trying to prompt me to do is ask myself some questions, right? Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms, such as God or whatever, deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you, right? When my mind closes, who am I hurting? You're not hurting me, right? I'm hurting myself. I'm hurting myself by closing my mind because the only thing I'm stopping myself from doing is asking myself these questions that I desperately need to ask myself, that I need for this growth in order to for this growth to occur. Afterward, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth, but if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere, so we used our own conception, however limited it was. Right? Once we became willing, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach. Not once I was convinced, right? Once we became willing. And I find that important too because just the act of willingness to believe in this power, I already begin to accept more things, right? This is why this is step two, right? It's in the beginning. And the came to believe, right? This belief for me didn't come until later in the process, but it didn't need to. Right, the willingness was there in the beginning. For me, by the time I actually really started to have an experience and truly believed that this power was working in my life was around my fifth step, and I am going to get to that later in the chapter, but that was when I started to really see it working in my life. But the willingness to get on my knees, right, the willingness to say maybe this thing is possible, that was enough to get me asking more questions. That was enough to give me that little bit of spark of hope, and that's enough to get me to continue to go forward with this work. And the question for step two, if I were to break it down as simply as this book can break it down, is do I now believe or am I even willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself? Am I willing to believe? Right? And I emphasize this word willingness so much because willingness is so important, right? It's indispensable. You know, when I first came in here, like I was saying before, this idea of God was kind of foreign to me, right? And when I first came in, I was not willing. I had a lot of experience in Alcoholics Anonymous where I wasn't willing to do any of this. I had, you know, well, she's not here today, but, you know, I had a family that pushed me into these rooms before I was ready to go into these rooms. And I believe that there are no mistakes in God's world and that that happened for a reason. And that gave me the information that I was able to have to later on in life know what was here and know what you guys were offering. And I may never have come because of that. Right, but at the time, I wanted nothing to do with this, but I was required to go for this reason or that reason. So I came in here without the willingness. And when you talked about God, I laughed. Right? I thought you were foolish. I thought you were deluded. I thought that you guys were filling your heads with nonsense in order to, you know, not think about the thing that I'm going to go do after this, right? Which is to go get drunk. So when that willingness wasn't there, this really meant nothing to me. But when I truly had a first step experience was when I started to come in here on my own, right? I was older, you know, I didn't have, you know, family or the law pressuring me to come into these rooms. I came in here because of what I saw earlier on. What I saw because I was pressured to come in here later ended up manifesting in some sort of hope, like maybe you people have something that might work for me. So when I did come in here, the God idea didn't seem so foreign to me anymore. And it's because I had that first step experience, right? The first step says, admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Well, because of this time that I had in AA, I had had some time sober as well. And that time sober was not time doing the steps, it was just times dry. Right? It was time where I really wasn't doing anything to treat my spiritual condition except just feeding it my self-will and doing things that I wanted to do, chasing after girls and playing video games all day and eating like garbage and doing all these other things that really didn't satiate the craving, but it helped get me through that day. So I knew what an unmanageable life looked like without a drink or a drug in me, right? I knew what, when my sponsor described to me self-will and what that looked like, I knew that when I did that, it led to unmanageability. I was able to see that at this point, right? So once that fire was lit under me, that willingness became more and more apparent, right? Desperation gives me willingness. It's why they call it the gift of desperation, right? I believe God gifted me with that desperation because if I didn't have it, I wouldn't be here today, right? I don't want to have a spiritual experience. I don't want to humble myself. I just want to do the thing that pops into my brain right away. I have this condition that makes me think that when something sounds like a good idea, I cannot do anything else. I have to do that, right? If I think of something and I think this thing will be fun, I will shove everything else out of my head, right? My mind wants what it wants, and it will convince me of anything in order to get me to do it, right? So I need to be desperate. I need to be willing. Upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure is built. Now, throughout the next few chapters, they build like this archway and they use the different steps. And I really like this analogy that step two is the cornerstone. You're looking at a big archway, right? The archway to spiritual freedom, to a spiritual awakening. And the cornerstone, which I'm not an architect, but I believe it's the stone on the corner at the bottom, right? Your base of the arch. Step two is your base, right? This is what we're going to build the arch on top of. The arch can't exist without a cornerstone. If there was no willingness to begin with, if I did not believe that it's possible for this to happen, the whole arch would have nothing to stand on top of. I need this cornerstone, this base. This is my very start, right? Step one is almost like before I even walk in. Step one gets me in here. Step two is when I'm really starting this. That was great news to us, for we had assumed we could not make use of spiritual principles unless we accepted many things on faith which seemed difficult to believe, right? I don't need to accept a religion. I don't need to accept yours or yours or yours or your spiritual ideas. I need to form my own, right? I tell sponsees or people when I speak that you can go as little as I am willing to shout something and throw a prayer up into the darkness and see what comes back, right? I don't have to know what's out there. I don't have to know what I'm praying to. All I needed, me personally, was to see that you guys were doing something that was working for you. And if you all told me that this is what you were doing, well, then I was inclined to think maybe there's something to it. That was all I needed, right? Coupled with that desperation and that seeing that sight of you having this experience and you people living happy, joyous, and free and having what I wanted, right? And you told me all I had to do was just be willing to think it's possible. I was on board with that, right? But not a second before that was I on board with that, because that first step experience wasn't there. It was comforting to learn that we could commence at a simpler level, right? Besides a seeming inability to accept much on faith, we often found ourselves handicapped by obstinacy, sensitiveness, and unreasoning prejudice. Many of us have been so touchy that even casual reference to spiritual things made us bristle with antagonism. Right? I've seen it take out a lot of people. I've seen some really good guys. I've had some really good guys go out because the God idea was they wanted to understand it more. They wanted to explain it more. They wanted to dig deeper into it in order for it to make sense before they were able to move forward with it. Right? For me, I didn't need it to make sense at the end. right? I didn't need it to make sense. I just needed to trust that I would do the rest of it, right? To trust that maybe this could work and start taking the rest of the action that was provided in front of me, right? I used to go through, I was sober, I mentioned this before, for 10 months before I got sober this time around, right? And I relapsed for, thank God, only about a month before I came back this time around. I've been sober since. And during that 10 months, I had an experience with these steps. I started to believe in a power greater than myself. I experienced freedom from the obsession. I felt happy, joyous, and free. I really did feel better than I had ever felt in my entire life before, and I really did love it. But the one thing that I've really just done inventory on and looked back on it and kind of what I think was really missing is that I thought God was a part of this program rather than God was this program. Whereas I thought that there was other stuff that I could do separate from God. I thought that I could write a fourth step, and that's got really nothing to do with God. That's me. I'm doing that work. And then God is kind of like, you know, oh, I admit it to you, blah, 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 whatever. I didn't look at it as God is the bigger picture, right? And that really, really ended up being the thing that took me out, because when it came down to the end of it, I wasn't relying on God. I was relying on self. These words up here and these actions are still human powers. If I remove God from all of this, it's a human power, and human powers do nothing for me. Right? And at the end of the day, I turned these steps into a human power. Right? I made the steps my higher power. Right? I needed there to be a higher power as the entirety of this thing. Right? To get in touch with this thing. And as soon as I pushed that away, as soon as I did that, I took my will back. And I started running the show again. And I started saying that, oh, I'll do these things and this things and whatever. You know, I'm taking the power back into my hands. And it didn't work for me. And as soon as I started doing that, I probably lasted another month. Right? And I suffered and I suffered. And then I got high again. If I had a true first step, I will be able to do this out of desperation, right? Though some of us resisted, we found no great difficulty in casting aside such feelings. Faced with alcoholic destruction, if we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as we tried to be on other questions, in this respect, alcohol was a great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness, right? I had to be beaten into a state of reasonableness, not just by alcohol, but by a self-imposed crisis, right? Constantly pulling the structure in on my head over and over and over beat me into that state of reasonableness, right? At the end of one of my favorite lines in the whole book that I'm sure I've said up here before, but at the end of one of the other chapters, you know, it talks about the desperation of a drowning man, right? We grasped at the flimsy reed that turned out to be the firm and strong hand of God, right? I'm not grabbing at a reed if I'm not drowning, right? A reed is flimsy. A reed is grass. If my head is above water, even if I'm sinking and I can see that I'm sinking, I'm not going to grab a grass because, oh, it's going to snap, or, oh, I've got it all figured out, right? I know what's going to happen if I grab that grass because I am the knower of all things. But when I'm drowning, all of a sudden, the ego is a little bit quieter, right? When the last bubble of air comes out of my mouth, I will grab anything because I'm fighting for my life, right? Skipping ahead to page 50, just one thing I wanted to read at the top of page 50. Instead, we looked at the human defects of these people and sometimes used their shortcomings as a base of wholesale condemnation. We talked of intolerance while we were intolerant of others. And this is something that really kept me personally away from the idea of God for a long, long time. And it was when I would see these things happen in, I'm not going to say any particular religion, but in some religions where I would say, look at how intolerant these people are. Look, these people don't like, you know, whatever, I'm not even going to bring up any subjects, but, you know, these people don't like this, and these people do this, and that's disgusting, and I don't agree with that, right? And I would use that as a reason to condemn an entire group of people and what they believe, whereas that's the human beings who follow a God, not the God itself, right? How can I condemn a God for what his followers do? We're all human beings, and we all have defects of character, right? I all suffer from the human condition, right? Imperfection, right? But instead of, looking at a God for what it is, I would instead critique his followers and say, this is why I don't believe in this God, right? And that kept my mind closed for a really long time. It kept my mind closed to this idea, and as long as my mind is closed, I'm still suffering because I'm running off self-will. I wanted to touch on the bedevilments too, right? My spiritual malady. is the third part of this illness, and it's the one part that we hadn't really touched on yet. It's the part that feeds all of the other two, right? And the symptoms of my spiritual malady are laid out in this book under what we call the bedevilments, right? We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of the lunar flight? Of course it was, right? Was the solution to these problems not more important to keeping my mind open to the world of science? Right before this, for those of you who have read it before this, they're talking about how people are so quick to say, oh, you know, a rocket to Mars? We haven't done it, but I have faith that we will, right? But I don't have faith that it's possible that what worked for you might work for me, right? I don't have faith that there is a power that worked in your life to solve these bedevilments for you could also work for me. Right? I'm willing to put my faith in pretty much anything else in this world except for God, right? Because I don't know why, because that's how my mind works, right? Because of ego, because of pride, because of all these different defects of characters, I'm willing to put my faith in anything but God, right? And these bedevilments are what my spiritual malady looks like. These bedevilments are things that I suffered from as long as I can remember. At 5 years old, I used to pray to God that I would die because my dad told me this is what you pray to God when you need things or when you want something, you pray to God for it. So I said, God, I want to die, right? Because I didn't like what life had to offer. I thought life had to be endured rather than to be enjoyed, right? These were the things that I remember feeling for as long as I can remember. And reading this really kind of opened my eyes to this is beyond alcohol, right? Alcohol is but a symptom of my alcoholism, right? My spiritual sickness. At 5 years old, I didn't like the guy I saw in the mirror, right? I was prey to misery and depression. I was uncomfortable all the time, right? This is my spiritual sickness. Drugs and alcohol were simply a temporary solution to this God-shaped hole in my heart. When I first picked up a drink, right, it filled that hole for me. I felt okay. And over time, it no longer filled the hole, but I have this allergy and this obsession that would convince me to keep going. And once I put one in me, I'm off to the races. And once I'd wake up in the morning, I believed and I obsessed over that time that it still worked for me, right, that it still did the trick. And it kept me going and going and going and going and going. The root of that problem has nothing to do with the drink. The root of that problem is the same problem that existed before I picked up a drink, which is that spiritual malady, that spiritual sickness. And only a spiritual solution can solve that. Now I'm going to turn ahead to page 60 and how it works. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. I cannot move on past this part of the book and through the rest of these steps if at this point I am not convinced of these three ideas. And when I'm going through response C, with this part of the book, we stop right here and we ask these all as a question. Am I convinced of these three things? And if not, in the original manuscript, they would suggest reread it over again and see if you're still not convinced, or else throw it away, right? We cannot move past this part if I'm not convinced of these three ideas at this point in the book, right? These are step one and two right here, that I am alcoholic and cannot manage my own life, right? I'm not going to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God if I think my will and my life is doing okay in my care. Right? If I think I can still successfully run the show, I'm not letting anybody else put their hands on it, especially this God fella. Then probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And I like that they say probably too, because I am an alcoholic and I am willing to pretty much try anything before I try something that involves humbling myself, that involves getting honest, and most importantly, that involves getting uncomfortable. Because if there's anything I hate, if there's anything that I drink to avoid, it is being uncomfortable. But I am still a lazy alcoholic, and the chances are that I tried every single possible thing out there in this world to stop drinking are pretty low, right? Because I maybe didn't have the funds, I maybe didn't have this. For me, I had to try pretty much everything, right? I had to try things on a smaller scale. If I'm being honest, I never tried moving to Aruba to see if that would cure my alcoholism, right? I didn't try it. I wasn't able to do it. But I am convinced today that it wouldn't have made a lick of a difference, right? I didn't need to go out there and try that. But I did need to try everything that was in my power and everything that I could possibly conceive to stop drinking before I actually stopped drinking, right? I had to try all these different human powers. I had to try this without God in it. I had to try doing just 9 of the steps instead of 12 of them. I had to try coming and sitting in meetings and just doing nothing and putting my hand up and sharing every once in a while. I had to try the fellowship. I had to try having a girlfriend keep me sober. I had to try going to therapy. I had to try anything I could think of, name it, and I've tried it, right? I tried going to rehab. I tried going for longer. I tried going for less time. I tried having my mom drug test me. I tried drug testing myself. None of it got me sober. Like, I didn't know I did the drugs. But and none of those things were a solution for me, right? None of those things did the trick for me. And I had to try every single one of them in order to be convinced that no human power could have relieved my alcoholism. Because the truth is that if I have that reservation in my mind that, maybe if I go to this, IOP, maybe I can just sit on my butt and play video games all day and just go to work and do nothing. Maybe that'll keep me sober if I do it this way, right? If that idea is still in my mind, or the idea that I can somehow, some way drink like normal people do, right? I'm not getting anywhere, right? I'm not going to be willing to do this. The willingness won't be there because the desperation isn't there. Desperation and willingness go hand in hand. And the third pertinent idea is that God could and would if he were sought. And that is that step 2 question right there, or not question, statement right there, that God could and would if he were sought, right? If I seek God, is it possible that God can do this for me, right? And for me personally, and I can only speak from my own experience, but for me personally, seeing God do it for you, seeing enough of you claim that God is what made the difference for you was enough for me in the end. It was enough for me in the end because I figured all of you couldn't possibly be in on this big elaborate lie together. And if you were, your stories were really consistent and that you probably might have something that you were trying to tell me. Right, the people have been telling me for years, right? Something that I saw in you people, and I saw in people who had got outside of this program as well, right? They later have a part in the book. Maybe it was something I read over. I don't know if I was going to touch on it, but there's later a part in the book where they talk about, I wish that I could have what that man has. If only I could accept what he so easily accepts. Right? I felt that way. I felt that way. I grew up around religious people. I saw the way they lived their life. I saw the peace they had. And I said, man, I wish I could have that, but there's no way that's for me. Because I can't accept what they can accept. I can't do the discipline that they can do. Because I want to do the things that I want to do, and I'm not willing to do that. And it was so relieving to be told that I don't have to accept the same exact things that they accept in order to get this process going. And after I accept one thing, the next thing isn't so bad to accept. And the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing. Right? If somebody just put me in these rooms and threw me out in the street and said, go make amends right now, I'd be gone, dude. I'd be gone. Although that's not everybody's experience. I know some people come in all gung-ho to make amends, and that's a different story. But that's not my experience. Being convinced of these three pertinent ideas, only being convinced, we are then at step 3. Right? And they put that in there and they highlight that because I must be convinced of these ideas or this means nothing. This means nada. I don't have my cornerstones. Nothing is there for me. The whole arch is going to fall apart as soon as I start to build it because I'm basically just throwing stones in the air and hoping they stay up. Right? The first requirement of step 3 is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. And where do I see this in my life? Where is this delusion smashed for me? And one thing about delusions is they are smashed through experience, right? Whether in the moment or in hindsight, they are smashed through experience. That delusion is smashed in step 1, right? That any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Because my life is unmanageable with and without alcohol. And the only consistent in that problem is me. Right? Me and my thinking and my willpower, my self-will doesn't get me anywhere, right? I know this in step 1 if I've truly had this first step experience. Going over to the next page, on page 61, while we read about the actor for a little while. Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only he manages well? Is a thought that goes through, not the first part, but the delusion that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only I manage well is a thought my brain is constantly, every day, trying to convince me of. And depending on what my spiritual life looks like today, kind of depends on whether I believe it or not. Right? Because, one of the speakers a few weeks back asked the group, where are we agnostic in our lives? And like a few things popped up to me right away. Right? Oh, my nighttime ritual, right? My nighttime, at nighttime, I go home and I have this whole big thing that I like to do, and I like to pray and meditate for, 30 minutes, but then I go longer, but then first, I have to play video games for at least, a couple hours, because, I have to do that first. I don't feel right if I don't do it, whatever. And then after that, well, it's 1 a.m, but I'm hungry. I can't go to sleep hungry, and I'll pray after I do that and whatever. And prayer gets pushed off later and later and later until it's 3:30 a.m. and I'm trying to pray and I'm like falling asleep and I'm like, God, great. And then I wake up like 20 minutes later and try to finish the prayer. That's not working for me, but I convince myself every day, day in and day out, that it will work today. And tonight, I'm going to be honest with you guys, I might convince myself of it, right? I'm not perfect by any means. This is something that I'm working on, that I'm bringing into prayer and meditation, but this is one of the areas in my life that I'm constantly taking my will back, right? That I'm constantly convincing myself, no, I can manage this properly. Maybe if I just play video games and then I pray and then I eat after I pray, And really the solution is just to pray first before all of it, but I just can't concede that in my mind because my brain is constantly telling me that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness if only I manage well, right? If only I manage well. And my mind is constantly trying to convince me of this. And when I'm on top of my spiritual game, when I'm truly actively trying to give these things over to God, it's a lot easier, especially once I've done it once or twice or three times and I start to build a habit out of it, to say, no, I can't manage this area of my life, right? I know I can't manage drinking. I know that I can't manage, my sobriety. I can't do this on my own, right? I know that. But in this one area of my life, come on, I want to play video games, Right? I convince myself that I can manage it. And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? And this is in reference to the things that I do to other people. Do they not retaliate, getting angry at me because of something that I did? Right? Most of the resentments on my 4-step, right? When I was writing my 4-step, most of these resentments were things that people did to me, seemingly unprovoked, right? Sure. You did this thing to me. But truth be told, when I got into my part, when I got into the fourth column and I looked at what did I do here, and we look into the past a little with the help of my sponsor, I can now see that I did something to either make them get angry at me. I did them wrong first. I did something to put myself in a position to be hurt, right? I did one of these things to get myself here where they're retaliating. But in my deluded mind, especially when I'm first coming in here, in my mind, I firmly, firmly believe that you did this all on your own. I didn't have a part to play in it, right? It had nothing to do with me. It was all you, right? And this is telling me no. A lot of the time when I am trying to run my life on self-will, other people are going to get in the way. Barefoot Bill puts it like this. We all have a script in our head, and all of you are script violators. You are violating my script right now. You shouldn't have moved that way. You shouldn't have had those shoes on. You shouldn't have stood up while I was talking. That's rude. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. But the kind of things that go on in the script in my head, right? But the one thing I don't consider is you all also have scripts in your head, and I'm probably constantly violating your script. Right now, if you live your life convinced that if everybody follows your script and only if everybody follows your script, you will be okay, you are going to butt heads with everybody, right? But I'm under the delusion that it's true, that you just have to follow my script and you'll be happier too. You got to throw out your script, all of you, and follow mine, right? And I believe this with all of my heart, so I'm constantly butting heads and hurting people and stepping on their toes and violating their scripts and getting them angry at me. And then when they come and slap me, I feel like, what the heck did I do? Right? I was just following my script, right? Going on to the next page, I tell myself everyone is at fault except me, too. One line that started on this page was, He's like the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining of the sad state of the nation. The minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century. Politicians and reformers who are sure all would be utopia if the rest of the world would only behave. Right? All of you are misbehaving. You guys are violating the script that you've never heard of and I've never told you about and you've never seen, you never will see, but you're violating it. And you need to be aware that you're doing that. But I'll passive-aggressively tell you by not saying anything and whatever, and so on and so forth, right? This is how the world works, and this is why this is so unfair that you guys are wronging me. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in positions to be hurt. Right? Just like we were just talking about. And why are we hammering this home so much in this chapter? Right? This is kind of like four-step stuff, whatever, hanging on the fourth step. I can't think of the word. But this is kind of like four-step-ish stuff. But the truth is that in order to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to God, I have to be fully convinced and shown that my life is not doing well in my hands. My will is not doing well in my hands. It is being destroyed constantly. And I'll tell you, there have been times, the last time that I went out there, when I truly, you know, took my will back, I took my will back long before I went out, but when I took my will back and I ended up with a drink and a drug in my hand again, my life, this life that God had built for me was gone in a matter of days. I had a roof over my head. I had a car to drive. I had a job. I had the fellowship. I had, you know, speaking commitments and all of these people that, you know, I could talk to. And I had, you know, guys that I would call on the phone every day. And I had, you know, it was simple, but it was this wonderful little, you know, it was this wonderful life, right? I had, you know, AA. I had this. I had that. And within 3 days, I had no home, no car, no commitments, you know. I was going into the rehab, that was a few days later, that I was just speaking in like a week ago, you know, and the patients were still there and they remembered me and they thought I was bringing a meeting at midnight. It was really awkward, but humbling. It was very humbling. And all of this stuff just came crumbling to the ground because I said, wait a minute, God, everything is going so great. You've given me all these wonderful things. Let me take a look at that. I need something to control, right? God doesn't need my help, right? God doesn't need my help to manage my will in my life. He's got that under control. He has a plan now, right? I'm following God's script now, but I first must make a decision to do that. And the big thing about decisions, right, is if I make a decision to be the Queen of England right now, what does that make me? Nothing. It just makes me some Joe Schmo sitting right here talking about being the Queen of England, right? It means nothing. It means nothing unless it is then followed by action, right? What does it mean to turn my will and my life over to the care of God? How do I go about doing that, right? Well, luckily, the rest of the steps, 4 through 12, tell me exactly how to do that. That's what this is. That's what I'm doing. I'm putting my will and my life in God's hands when I do a 4th, 5th, 6th, etc. step, right? That's what all of this is. But a decision must be made before I take that action, right? I first have to decide that this is what I'm going to do. Even if they're small, tiny decisions, my brain makes a decision before I reach out to grab this bottle, right? Everything is first started by a decision, and this is no exception, right? In step 3, I'm making the decision that I'm going to go through with this, and we think carefully before we make this decision because we want to know that we're sure we're ready to go through with it, right? It's a big decision in my life that I'm finally going to, you know, humble myself and let somebody else take charge. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. Right? Selfishness is one of the roots of all of my troubles. Right? As we see all these other things, me trying to get you to follow my script is causing me to harm you, is causing me to step on your toes, to, you know, I keep trying to think of ways to say this without swearing, to do you wrong, right? That's why I paused for a second. I'm like, how do I say that without saying, okay, got it. Got it. Trying to find ways to do you wrong, right? Just to get what I want. You know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right? My intentions were always good. I wanted what's best for all of us, as long as it's my way of going about it, right? And if I have to run you over with my car to get there, that's what I'm going to do, all right? And that was how I lived my entire life. So it was no wonder that people were constantly angry at me. I had a big list of harms, and I was angry at everybody else, because how dare you get mad at me? I'm just trying to help, right? I'm just trying to make everything better for all of us, right? I have all of us in mind, except I'm first in line. Many of us had moral, philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. We still were guided by self rather than by God, right? I still was putting myself in the beginning, even when I had, you know, religious convictions, philosophical convictions, right? All of these things, I can say that these are my morals and this is my life and this is what I follow. And it can be amazing. I've had religious sponsees before, right? But like I said in the beginning, religion is fantastic and nothing in this book is going to take away from your religion or whatever your current practices are. It will only add on to it. I'll never contradict anything that anybody's religion says when they come in here, you know. Nothing in this is going to do that. It's only going to add on to it. But if my religion, or not even my religion, I shouldn't say that. If what I was doing to practice my religion, is what I meant to say, was enough, then I would be sober right now. I wouldn't be drinking. God would have me in control. But whatever I was doing wasn't enough, right? I need more, right? I need to put myself more into this, right? Because I'm still being guided by self rather than by God. Because if I was being guided by God, like I said, I'd be sober right now. I'd be okay. Or I'd be drinking like a normal person. I don't know, right? But I'm being driven by self, was the point, no matter what my moral or philosophical convictions are. So this is the how and why of it. This is how we're going to do this, right? They start to give us a little bit of an intro in how we actually go about turning our will and our life over. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work, right? We've learned this pretty easily. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. This is something that is a little off topic, but when I pray to myself, when I like to, you know, just meditate and just sit there, it really does calm me down to sit there and say, you know, you are the principal, I am your agent. You are the father, I am your child, right? It helps me bring me back to center and help me to, you know my place. Right? Because my brain is constantly reaching for the stars and trying to put me in charge and me as the father. And the truth is, I burn up a lot of energy when I'm doing that. Right? I was so tired all the time. Right? Not even physically, but mentally, both. Right? From trying to orchestrate everything to go my way, and it would never work out. And when it did work out, it didn't work out. You know, it still didn't work out for me in the way that I imagined it, in the way that I wanted it. It didn't give me satisfaction, and I used every bit of energy to do it. Right? And when I catch myself doing that again, it's the same way. Right? And I have to just sit back and remind myself that I am the child, and you are the father. Right? You are the principal and I am your agent. Right? And it brings me back to center. Right? It reminds me that God is in charge. God has got this. Right? Stupid little things, too, that come up on my way here, for example. Right? I'm just, like, on time. You know, my mom is sick at home. I'm trying to help out, you know, but I'm bad at leaving the house anyway. So I'm, you know, just on time. And I realized I forgot my vape. Right? It's these stupid little things, but, you know, I depend on, you know, sucking on this little vape thing 24/7 because that's how my brain works. I'm an alcoholic. I gotta, you know, have something, you know, and I sit there and my heart, like, skips a beat. I'm like, oh, this is like my teddy bear. Like, I love this thing. I can't go here and not have it, whatever. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, you are the father and I am the son, right? God saw fit for a reason that I don't have this stupid little thing, right? God saw fit that I come here without it. Why? I don't know, right? It's not my place to know. In due time, in God's time, I will get to see the reasons. And some of these things, I may never know the reason, but I know that God is better at running the show than I am, right? I know that if I had my way, right, things don't work out. I know that if we did it my way and I decided to turn around and go race home to get this thing and I was 20 minutes late, right, that wouldn't work out for anybody, right? But I also know that maybe there's a reason, right? I don't know the reasons. I had something come up. I have things come up in my life all the time where something comes up and I can't go somewhere and it turns out I'm exactly where I needed to be, right? It turns out that I'm exactly where God needed me to be. That's all right. I spaced on the next thing, but it's okay. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom, right? Step 3 is the keystone. Now, once again, someone correct me if I'm wrong. The keystone is the big piece in the center that holds the whole bridge together, correct? Mm-hmm. Yes, okay, that's what I thought. The keystone holds the whole thing together, right? This decision that I've made holds the whole thing together. Right? I need this decision. I can't go anywhere without this. And I'm making this decision every day, too. This is not something that I do once. Right? For me, I say the third step prayer, which we're coming up to in a minute, every day. Oh, my God. It's already... I thought I was going to get a lot further. I didn't. I say the third step prayer every day because I need to constantly remind myself of this. I constantly need to turn my will and my life back over to God. It's not so much of a one and done thing for me, right? It's the keystone because I'm working on this every single day. I can take my will back at any time, right? But I can also give it back to God at any time. You know, I'm doing this over and over and over. You know, same thing with these steps. I live these. This is a lifestyle, right? I don't just get to 12 and I'm done. You know, I live in 10, 11, and 12, right? I make this decision every day. I make the decision to do the right thing, right? I make the decision to turn to God rather than go within self and try to find what I think is best for this, right? To go into prayer and meditation instead. The next part is one of my favorite parts because we start getting into some promises, right? What do I get from this, right? I want something. Third step promises. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. I am no longer running the show. I am no longer running the show. It's something that in our 10th step directions, it tells me to say every day. I am no longer running the show. Thy will not mine be done, right? I might have added the not mine part, but thy will not mine be done. Right? God is the employer now. I am no longer in charge. These things that happen, I can now trust that it's happening for a reason. And there's so much peace in that. That when something doesn't go my way, that when I'm suffering, I know that God is taking care of me anyway. That I know that I'm suffering even for a reason. I had this very painful experience a few months back. You know, just without getting into detail, you know, just a lot of loss in my life at one time. And I was super upset and depressed. And any other time in my life, and I kept thinking about this too, any other time in my life, if I had felt even one iota of the pain that I felt that day, I would have been out the door. I would have went and drank. Not only did I not drink, I didn't have the desire to drink. I didn't want to drink, right? I had this clarity, but it was so much more than that. I remember having these distinct spiritual experiences where I would wake up in the morning and before I even opened my eyes, my heart would be pounding in my chest, right? I'd feel miserable. You know, I hated everything that was going on. And I got up and I prayed. And the first thing that I did, rather than go turn to a drink, go turn to a drug, go try to make myself feel better, right? Doing one of the other things that I do to feel better, right? I got on my knees and I prayed and I asked God to help me use this pain to be useful, right? Help me use this pain that I feel right now to help somebody else, to better relate to somebody else, to do whatever you see fit with it. Help me learn from this pain. Help me grow from this pain. Help me take from it what you see fit and let it be done when you see fit, right? Not when I see fit. Not, God, please take this away right now. I can't live with this. No. Do with me as you see fit, right? And the experiences that I had that day, I remember standing outside, and they talk about somewhere in this book, and I'm not good with page numbers, but they talk about it, where you feel like this cold wind blowing through you like you're on a mountaintop. And I remember standing, looking out the window, feeling that exact thing. I was either looking out the window or I was outside, where I just felt this peace blow over me, and it felt like wind. It might have actually been windy too, but it felt like wind, you know? You know, just to be completely truthful with it, it definitely was windy, but I felt this way. It was like almost like going through me, and I remember just feeling throughout all of this pain and suffering, and I was having anxiety every day. It was horrible. I was having these panic attacks. I couldn't do anything, and I just felt peace. I just felt peace. I felt taken care of, and I knew that no matter what happened, that I was in God's hands and that I was taken care of. Right? And all of a sudden I had like people showing up for me that I never thought would be there for me. I never truly realized how many people in my life cared about me and were there for me. Right? God putting his children in my path. Right? God speaking to me through other people. The amount of peace and growth that I had come through that. And you know what I did this entire time is I threw myself into these steps. Right? I threw myself into this program. When somebody told me to go do something from in these rooms, I did it. Right? Go make an amends. Done. Right? I was going making these amends and I was miserable. But you know what? At the end of it, I felt better. Right? And when I finally got through all of this, it's almost indescribable. I had this feeling where I knew that I could get through anything. I knew that God would hold my hand and guide me through anything. I knew that there was absolutely nothing that God could not get me through. I was absolutely certain of this. I had this faith just within me that was never there before, that was never... I never truly believed it, right, until this point. And not only that, but I felt just this incredible peace. right? This peace. It was just this peace through the pain, right? I'm just sitting there and I feel okay. Even when I didn't feel okay, I still felt okay. Even when the people actually left this earth, I felt okay, right? I still felt okay. I knew that I was going to be okay. And I felt my feelings and I felt anger and I felt sad and I felt, and those were all okay to feel. It was okay to feel those feelings. I never sat and felt those feelings before. I ran from them. And you know what happened? At the end of it, once I felt my feelings, they were done. That blew my mind. Normally when I felt a feeling, I ran away from it and it basically just lingered inside me and hurt for the rest of my life. And I just hate that person. Sorry. You know, I hate that person, right? I hate that person. I hate to sting her, you know, whatever. But no, I felt those feelings and then they were over. And then I was done feeling them. And then I moved through them. Because that's what happens when we feel feelings, when we don't hide from them, when we don't run from them, when I actually experience them. And I never experienced that in my entire life. And it was one of the most beautiful things I had ever experienced, right? They talk about beautiful pain. It really was. It really was. I never thought that life had anything like that to offer. I never thought that there would be light and darkness, right? And it truly gave birth to the idea in my head that there cannot be darkness, there cannot be light without darkness. There cannot be good without bad, right? The two are just like yin and yang. They exist together. There is no one without the other. If there was no pain, then there could be no joy. I couldn't experience joy if it was only joy all the time, right? At least not as this human, right? As a human being. That's not how my brain works, right? And it was just this beautiful, humbling experience. And all of that was because I realized, and I had this experience, if AA and God weren't here in my life today, none of that would have happened. You know what I would have done? I wouldn't have showed up. I wouldn't have been at my grandfather's deathbed. I wouldn't have been at any of these places. You know what I would have done? I would have showed up to his house to steal his medications, right? Instead, I helped him get up, right? When he couldn't get up, I helped him go to the bathroom. I helped him get his medications, right? I helped him take what he needed to take. I was there, right? That's a gift. That's a gift that I was able to be there. And I thank God for that every day. And that's my time for now. So thanks for letting me share.